And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Michael Gross. Michael is one of Australia's leading parenting writers and speakers. He has written 12 books for parents, including Anxious Kids, co-authored with Dr. Jodie Richardson, and his latest, an updated version of Why Firstborns Rule the World and Laterborns Want to Change It. Michael has been a regular on TV, radio, print and digital media, and was chosen to join the Professional Speakers Hall of Fame in 2013. Now Michael is passionate about spreading the word on the impact that birth order has on families, schools, workplaces and communities. Michael, welcome back to Dads on the Air.
Yeah, good on you, Bill. Thanks for having us again.
So look, perhaps we should get some declarations out of the way. Where do you fit in your family's birth order?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, but it's a good one to start with because it shows that birth order is not always a neat set of numbers. So I'm fourth in my family, so I'm the last, but that makes me the youngest. But I was also what I call the Catholic mistake, or my parents, my siblings always did. So there was a six-year gap between myself and the sibling above me. And my first two siblings were married by the time and I was six, so they were out of the picture, so to speak. So while I was the fourth or the youngest, I was almost an only child in lots of ways. So I spent a lot of time on my own, and I was fortunate to have parents who, by the time I came along, they were pretty tired. they took their eye off the ball. They had plenty to keep them busy looking, you know, raising my two older siblings, and one of them had a baby about the same time sort of I was around as well. So, yeah, youngest, but also an only child in lots of ways.
Well, perhaps we'll call you a change of life baby. I think that was the expression. In that respect, you bring this out in the book that it's not so much something set in concrete. It's perhaps a tendency that you get from various parts of the order, and they can sometimes change around, can't they?
Yeah, I prefer to call it family constellation rather than birth order. But we know birth order, so I'll stick with that term. But why I say family constellation, so it's a bit like every constellation of stars is different according to the pattern of those stars, and very similar to family constellation is every family is different. And once you understand how everyone fits in, just like my little story there, then the sort of rules or the theory start to make perfect sense. And so that's why it's not always just a neat set of numbers, but it works largely because the simple nature of how groups operate. So whenever you get a group of three people together, you tend to get sort of one who takes more of a lead, you'll get one who follows a little bit more, and you'll get sort of the glue between the two. And I guess the first family that you belong to is your family. So it is a little bit about taking roles within your family, depending on your birth order. And the other aspect which comes into the mix is the fact that we're different as parents for every child. And so when we've got the first one in, coming into the world, it's a big event. We tend to be a lot stricter on that firstborn, and you know, we have hopes and dreams and aspirations will often go on the firstborn's shoulders. And as we have more kids, those aspirations are shared, and kids get a little bit more space the further they go down the family. So, you know, if you're the younger one in the family, you're parented a little bit differently than the first one. You know, the expectations are probably is not as strong. Youngest ones tend to do a lot of things earlier than the firstborn. You know, a lot of parents with their firstborn say, you're never going to go out until you're about 24. Mm. By the time the youngest one sort of comes along, if you have three, or, you know, the youngest one will often go out a lot earlier than the others as well. So it's those two factors at play which impact on birth order.
Now, in the first edition of your book, which is Why Firstborns Rule the World and Laterborns Want to Change It, it came out in 2003, and at the time you did a survey on people who interviewed you. You noted that interviewers from print media were mainly firstborn, radio were mainly later born. So I'm going to declare I'm the third of five, very much a middle child. Okay. Are you already forming an opinion?
Yeah, and that works through... Thanks for sharing that one. And the simple reason is, and it makes sense when you understand it. So firstborns tend to be to always score higher on introversion. They tend to be the low risk takers as well. They'll also go to more high status jobs. So law, for example, is full of firstborns. And it makes sense because the firstborn often, the expectation is a lot higher for firstborn. So that notion of being in the print media, tends to be a little bit more a firstborn thing. And often, what we do know about is as you move down the family, the later borns, extroversion is more a feature, a personality feature of later borns than it is of firstborns. And of course, the old on radio and on TV, etc., you tend to be a little bit more extroverted as well. So they're the tendencies. And it's funny how that tends to play out so much. While I'm not saying that's the only reason, that'd be silly to say that. But again, this is about the patterns of behaviour. So more and more I find that backed it up to, you're not the exception. You tend to be more the rule. A later born, more recognized, the radio, the extroverted reporting person.
Well, one of the reasons you give for revising and updating the first edition is that it gave you an opportunity to deal with questions from that first book. What were some of the most common questions you got?
I guess one of the most common ones was, why doesn't it fit my family? I understand that firstborns are, and secondborns and thirdborns are this and this and this, but it doesn't fit my family. And so I tried to explain some of the reasons why it didn't fit every family. So there are variables such as space. So if there's a space between kids of 6 or 7 years, the family tends to start again. So if there's a child who's born in your family with special needs, then that'll impact. So if special needs child is first, then more likely the second-born child will be more the first-born, and they'll get the responsibility, and that'll go their way. So gender also plays a part as well, and there's also a cultural aspect that just because you're born first, according to certain cultures, doesn't mean you're going to be the one that we put our resources and attention on. Certain cultures still value one gender over another, so the primary gender might be the second born, so they're treated more like a first born. So I try to explain some of those rules. And the other question, which I got a lot, was, what about twins? Which is a good question, because now we've got more and more twins are around at the moment, because twins are related to older mothers. So we've got women who are delaying, families delaying the birth of the first child. So more and more, we've got twins. So twins tend to work out like a first and a second. They're competitors and companions. So if you've got a twin, sometimes they'll change around. One will be the boss or the leader at school, whereas the other one might be the boss and the leader in social situations. And the other question I got, which is a really good question, was, and what about blended families? How do blended families fit in? And the simple answer for that is, birth order is one of the reasons why families often don't blend, but they'll collide. Your birth order personality is often set up by the time you're 6 or 7. And if you're a firstborn, you want to protect that position because it's a position to be in. And if you're the youngest as well, that's a good position. So if you've got a couple of families who are joining together, and I always go to the Brady Bunch because people of my generation, maybe some listeners don't know the Brady Bunch, but people of my generation will recognise it was a TV show. See, I think it was in the 80s now, where we had dad came along and he had three boys and joined with his partner who had three girls. And they were all similar ages and it all sort of blended in beautifully. And that was rubbish. Looking at birth order position, if you've got a 10-year-old on one side of the family and another 10-year-old is on the other and they came in together, there'd be a fair bit of conflict about who's first and, who rules the roost. And similarly, if you've got two youngest kids of a similar age, they don't want to give up that treasured spot, so there'll be a bit of conflict there as well. So it's an added complication, birth order, when families do blend.
Yeah, the Brady Bunch, definitely a fantasy, I think. But look, your book gives us a fascinating insight into our own behaviours, and perhaps we look at friends and family differently. But it's also important for jobs, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it does relate to the sort of work you do. And again, this is not a set in stone type concept, but it's a concept we often don't look at. One of the reasons is that we tend not to look at or even know the birth order of our workmates. You know, it's pretty obvious, all the visual things are quite obvious. We know the gender and we know the age and we know the sort of almost the race or cultural background because that's fairly obvious and we can adapt according to that. And we often operate on a set of assumptions, whether they're right or wrong, but we have them. Whereas birth order is, we often don't understand or know the birth order of our workmates because, I guess we're pretty polite people. Mm. We sort of don't sort of delve too much. So it does impact. Well, what we do find that it's not just the job that you do, but your birth order impacts often in the way you carry out your job and the way you lead. So, you know, one of the fascinating aspects is that, as I said before, certain occupations will attract certain birth order personalities. So engineering is often a firstborn because I'm in control. I like to have everything measured and detailed. So it tends to be more detailed people. You know, those detailed professions are often more suit more firstborns, and often more the creative type roles will suit the laterborns, and those diplomats, those family diplomats, those kids stuck in the middle, perhaps they're more suited to often, you know, working with other people or working within in group situations. So I know myself, if I go back to myself, I learned by being practically an only child that I like to work by myself. I can spend time on my own and I essentially really enjoy, you know, writing and writing books, etc., because that's very much that detail. That's very much something I can do myself. When I go out and present, which requires me to be extroverted and to stretch myself, I find that a little bit more of a challenge. So I feel far more comfortable in that sort of only child or only adult type situation, which I do now.
I'm thinking with regard to teams that perhaps you might need a mixture of the birth order. And in particular, I'm thinking of selecting the astronauts to go to Mars, for instance. you may not want to have all firstborns or all laterborns, would you?
No, exactly right. I sort of joke sometimes that if you've got two firstborn parents, you know, that's serious. you'll have your child enrolled into, you know, sort of an independent school when they're in the womb. So, you know, parents are often, you know, look ahead from a work perspective. Yeah, I think the whole notion of we want our groups to be mixed, and we certainly know that the personalities which birth order tends to create means that we've got a nice mix of people. And one of the groups that we're going to be missing was our family shrink are those middle kids. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things, you know, back to what you're saying, that how you form your team, it could well be done by taking birth order into account. And it's certainly something I talk about from an education perspective. When I work with teachers, I ask them to do a birth order audit of the kids they have in their classrooms and to start to use that to help kids form groups and also to help to use that when they start to allocate children into classes for the next year. So you don't always have a group of only kids going through, that you start to mix it up. But also that gives only kids, perhaps you've got a youngest child, what we do is that the youngest children do benefit from being the eldest in a class occasionally because they're always the youngest at home. So, you know, you take that into account. So there's lots of different ways you can use birth order information, whether you're in a workplace or in a school or a family.
And we're speaking today with Michael Gross, who is the author of a new book called Why Firstborns Rule the World and Laterborns Want to Change It. Michael, we might take a break, and about this part of the program we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. So could you tell us which one you've picked?
I'm a Paul Kelly fan. I love his stuff. I've just finished reading a biography of Paul Kelly, and his perhaps most proudest song, according to Kelly, was How to Make Gravy. It's almost, according to Kelly, his perfect song. So I love the song. So it's How to Make Gravy.
Hello, Dan. It's Joe here. I hope you're keeping well. It's the 21st of December. Now they're ringing the last bell. If I get good behavior, I'll be out of here by July. Won't you kiss my kids on Christmas Day? Please don't let them cry for me. Brothers are driving down from Queensland, and Stella's flying in from the coast. They say it's gonna be 100 degrees, even more maybe, but that won't stop the road. Who's gonna make the gravy now? I bet it won't taste the same. Just that flour, salt, a little red wine. Don't forget a dollar for tomato sauce, for sweetness and that extra tang. And give my love to Angus and to Frank and Dolly. Tell them all I'm sorry, I screwed up this time. And look after Rita, I'll be thinking of her early Christmas morning when I'm standing. Here Mary's got a new boyfriend. I hope he can hold his own. Do you remember the last one? What was his name again? Just a little too much cologne. And Roger, you know I'm even gonna miss Roger. 'Cause there's sure as hell no one in here I wanna fight. Afraid to baby. Have a Merry Christmas, I'm really gonna miss it. All the treasure and the trash, later in the evening, I can just imagine, you put on Junior Murphy, and push the tables back, and you dance with Rita, I know you really like her, just don't hold her too close, oh brother, please don't stab me in the back, I didn't mean to say that.
We're dads on the air. That was How to Make Gravy by Paul Kelly. I might mention that we've interviewed Stuart Coop on this program about the time that book came out, but in connection with that, with the song as well.
Oh, yeah, fantastic, fantastic.
So we're speaking today with Michael Gross, who is the author of a new book called Why Firstborns Rule the World and Laterborns Want to Change It. So, Michael, there have been a lot of changes in parenting over the last 50 years, and particularly, I suppose, dads. Would one explanation be the rise in proportion of firstborns?
Yeah, look, one of the big changes, I guess, is size, family size, and it's impacted on how kids are raised. And it's common sense when you think about it. So if we go back and we look at the families have always been large. If we go back 200-300 years, families were, you know, like 7, 8, 9. And that was not just lack of contraception, but it was also a way of preserving species. We have lots of kids to make sure some survive, so to speak. And as we moved into the 20th century in Australia, we sort of peaked again. It dipped and then it peaked again. I think it was in 1961 where the average was a family was a family of four. So, and then it started to drop back again. So when we had a family of four, or more, those families, the parenting of those families is very much about, they're parented like a large family. Those families look very different than small families. So I did some research in the 1990s and looked at the difference between a large family and a small family. And one of the things I found is that the parenting is very different. So those large families, the discipline's different. We discipline the group. There's a lot more delegation goes on. There's a lot more of elder siblings looking after younger siblings. Can you change your little brother's nappy for me, or can you hear your younger sister read? So mum and dad aren't doing everything. It's more a group-based notion. So the mum and dad are facilitators of the group, so to speak. And then we saw in the 90s, family shrunk to three, and then into the as the main number. And now we've reached a point where 60% of Australian families have two kids or less. So we've moved into what's known as micro families. And a micro family, when you've got two kids or less, the parenting is very much what I call an individual endeavour. No longer are you parenting the tribe, but you're more parenting each individual child, and your discipline is more individual. You're nurturing individually, which is fine. But it certainly means that kids don't get enough space. Sometimes knowing every time a child has sneezed or every issue they have, doesn't give them the opportunity to resolve and solve some of their issues themselves. Whereas when you've got a larger family, kids tend to get a little bit more space, and you're not even sure if the youngest one had breakfast this morning, but you know, job's right as long as they're at school, etc. So kids tend to fend for themselves a little bit more, develop sort of more skills a little bit as families get bigger, and as they get smaller, there's a little bit more, is I guess, required of us as parents. And as good parents, we want to be on to everything, but being on to every single thing is probably not always the healthiest. Sometimes we've got to kind of step back a little bit and give kids a chance to, you know, some space as well to sort some things out. So certainly size makes a huge difference. And I think when we look at a birth order perspective as well, what we're seeing now is that we've got a new birth order position in many ways. So if you've got 60% of families with two kids or less, that means you're not going to have too many middle kids. You're not going to have too many three-child families, and there goes the baby, the family. So what we're seeing is now is the second child is not just a second child, but is also shares some of the characteristics of your youngest. Now, I haven't heard too many parents turn around and say to me, this is my second child, he or she's the baby of the family. We tend to say that when there's three or four kids. However, that second does very often have some youngest characteristics, and particularly if those families are all the same gender. So if you've got two boys the same gender or two girls the same gender, sometimes that second born will be a second and also a youngest. And I put a chapter in called the Prince Harry effect, because Prince Harry is, you know, almost a poster child for that second born slash youngest. He's the sort of rebellious one. He's an extrovert. He's done away with the family, you know, going the royal family way, and he's gone his own way. So those youngests and seconds will often go their own way and do things completely differently, just like a lot of youngest children traditionally do.
He is a classic, I suppose, from all the things you point out in your book, in that he was the first to leave the nest, and he married outside his cultural group. He's really ticks all the boxes, doesn't he?
Look, he does. He does. And the more he gets himself into trouble in the press, the better it is publicity-wise in some ways. It's funny, I wrote this before a lot of that happened, but, it's an interesting one. I mean, they are, if you look at, you know, someone says, how does birth order work? Why? Just got to look at Prince William and Prince Harry. So Prince William is your typical firstborn. And what we know about firstborns is they're the family conservatives. So if you're an academic family, there's a good chance the firstborn will be an academic. So, of course, William's born into the royal family, and he's born to be king. He's being groomed to be king, and he's also chosen a wife who fits the mould perfectly. So they're almost the poster couple as a royal family. And then you've got Harry who comes in, and if William was the heir, well, Harry's the spare. And the hardest thing about Harry is that every time another child comes, William has another child, he moves further down the line. He moves further away from the throne, so to speak. And so he's been freed up from a lot of responsibility. He hasn't got all that responsibility. And part of the job of, you know, we know that those second borns will will be different than the firstborn. And so Harry is a different personality completely, and he's more extroverted. He's a very much an agent of change. And so when I looked at the notion of laterborns like to change the world, well, he's certainly challenging the status quo with his behaviour at the moment.
Things I really liked about your book is that you explain some of these things. Now, I think you talked earlier about the increasing proportion of firstborns, and that is going to have an effect on politics, isn't it? So that conservative politics have probably got a good future.
That's right. Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, how far do you extrapolate? That's all about extrapolating and hypothesising. But it is, the firstborns tend to be the more conservative type of character. They're less likely to take risks. So, yeah, I guess if you continue to have more firstborns and more of these serious, low-risk-taking firstborns, well, politically, I might be... Probably if I wanted to get into Parliament, I might stand on the Conservative side. Or if one of my kids wanted to stand in the Parliament and say, Dad, which party should I go for? I want to make sure I get a seat. Maybe if you use that and extrapolate that way, maybe I'd be advising to say, maybe go down the Conservative side.
Look, there are so many fascinating insights. Unfortunately, we're running out of time today, but look, I can only recommend this new book, Why Firstborns Rule the World and Laterborns Want to Change It. Some incredibly prescient answers to some of the major questions we face today. So it just remains for me to thank our special guest, Michael Gross. Michael, thank you very much for once again being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
Good on you, Bill. Much appreciated, and thanks for supporting it. Yeah, I've loved writing the book, and I love talking about it. I think there's it's not the answer to everything, but it's certainly, it's a lens upon which we can look at a lot of our relationships as well. So, yeah, so thanks for supporting it.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. If you'd go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, you can send us an email and we will be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to your favourite podcast app or our website, dadsontheair.com.au. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.